Communism in Germany, Part 1. Why Americans should read this book. The question of communist propaganda and activities is of immediate importance to the American people in view of the consideration now being given to the question of recognition of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics by the government of the United States. Here is a challenging book. It should be read by every thoughtful citizen because it presents the history of the life and death struggle Germany has been waging against communism. It reveals that the subversive methods and the destructive objectives of the communists in Germany are the same as are employed in the United States by those enemies of all civilized nations. This book is not a defense of anti-Semitism, nor is it a defense of the principles or measures of the Hitler government, the bitter opposition of many to some phases of the Nazi domestic program should not blind us to the reality of the communistic threats. The value of this German exposé as an object lesson to other countries has led our committee to place it in the hands of leaders of public opinion throughout the United States. The lessons to be gathered from this book, Communism in Germany, should lead our citizens to demand more effective measures of defense for our system of government and our moral and social standards.
You're listening to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
In the following podcasts, we will lay before the English-speaking public of the world a chapter from the recent history of Germany, which has rightly attracted the attention of all civilized nations. From the description that we have just given you, the reader will clearly realize what an important development in world history has occurred in Germany. It was in view of the key position between East and West occupied by Germany in the fight waged by Bolshevism against the civilized nations that the Moscow Third Communist International wished that the decisive battle in the World Revolution should be fought on German soil. The lasting merit of the German National Revolution will be that it saved the world from Bolshevist chaos. The revelations regarding the attempted communist insurrection on the eve of the National Revolution will cause a considerable sensation. It must, therefore, be expressly stated that the description of the Bolshevik conspiracy, of high treason and treason to the state, of the organized terrorizing of the Nazis, and of the plan for a rising, is based exclusively on official material, of which the reliability is beyond all doubt. The General League of German Anti-Communist Associations will make the original material available for seriously interested students of public affairs. We desire to take this opportunity of expressing our special thanks to all the officials of the Reich and the federal states who have permitted the author to examine the pertinent material. The present work serves the purposes of nothing but the search for truth. It avoids generalizations and exaggerations. The idea was to provide a pamphlet for the masses of the population, written in an impartial and scientific spirit, which will serve as the unshakable foundation for the judgment of history. This pamphlet does not deal with the special matters connected with the burning of the Reichstag in order not to prejudice the case. We are informed that it is intended to publish an official collection of the judgments of the Supreme Court in connection with the communist conspiracy. It is hoped that the General League will be able to exhibit these documents in an anti-communist museum, which is shortly to be established in Berlin. By means of this and other works and publications, the General League will be able to enlighten the German nation and international public opinion with regards to the real aims and doings of the Communist International, and to invite attention to the terrible danger which it represents for all nations. armed rising is not one method among others for the seizure of power by the Communist International, but the sole and decisive weapon in a struggle for the dictatorship of the proletariat. The programme of the Communist International, which was accepted by the Sixth World Congress of the Comintern in the year 1928, contains the following remarks with regards to this. Quote, "When the ruling classes are disorganized, the masses in a state of revolutionary ferment, when the middle class is inclined to join the proletariat, and the masses have shown themselves ready to fight and to make sacrifices, it is the task of the proletarian party to lead the masses in a frontal attack against the bourgeois state. This will be attained by the propagation of gradually intensified slogans, workmen's councils, control of production by the workmen, peasant committees for the forcible expropriation of the big landowners, disarmament of the bourgeoisie, and the arming of the proletariat, etc., and by the organization of mass action. Such mass action includes strikes, strikes in connection with demonstrations, strikes in connection with armed demonstrations, and finally, the general strike, combined with the armed rising against the government authority of the bourgeoisie. This highest form of the struggle follows the rules of warfare and necessitates, as a preliminary plan of campaign, an offensive character in the fighting and unlimited devotion and heroism on the part of the proletariat." Close quote. "It is owing to the peculiar mixture of brutality and cynicism, insane devotion to the purpose in view, and ruthlessness of Bolshevism, that these phrases in the communist program have been authoritative, word by word, for the entire work of disintegration pursued by the German Communist Party. Everything undertaken by the German Communist Party and its numberless affiliated organizations acquired sense and value exclusively insofar as it could serve as a preparation for the armed rising. Whether it was a question of the sexual disintegration of the young during the nude bathing, or of espionage in enterprises of military importance, whether the unemployed were encouraged to form bands to rob provision stores, or whether the church was abused and rendered despicable, or whether subversive pamphlets were distributed in the army, or whether the peasants were encouraged to offer resistance to compulsory auctions, it was always a question of preparatory measures for the armed uprising. Quote, "The armed rising is the highest form of the political struggle of the proletariat. Lenin, of course, never regarded the rising as an isolated act, unconnected with the other features of class warfare. The rising is prepared by the entire previous struggle between the classes in any given country and represents the organic continuation of the latter. The entire activities of the Revolutionary Party, the fight for peace against the imperialistic intervention in Soviet Russia, China, etc., against the coming imperialistic war between Europe and America, etc., against capitalistic rationalization, for the raising of wages, for social insurance, for a higher standard of life of the proletariat as a whole, for the nationalization of the soil, the parliamentary struggle, etc., etc., all that must be regarded from the perspective point of view of the preparation and mobilization of the masses for the highest form of struggle at the moment when the revolution is ripe for the rising." Close. A similar opinion was expressed by the other theoretical advocate of the armed rising, Hans Kippenberger, the well-known military leader of the German Communist Party. "The armed rising is the most decisive, most acute, and highest form of class warfare, where the proletariat must adopt at the a suitable moment in every country in order to overthrow the domination of the bourgeoisie and to take the power into their own hands. The armed rising is not a thing by itself. It is not an act isolated from the rest of class warfare, but the most acute form and the highest stage of a class warfare, which becomes more acute and intense. It is only a special link in the chain of the struggles which end in the armed rising. It is not interrupted by the various partial struggles and preliminary struggles, but prepared for by them. The armed forces of the revolution do not appear from nowhere by magic or at the mere command of the party, but are consolidated and hardened in these struggles. Close quote. The armed rising is thus the last link in the chain of Bolshevization and the first link in the chain of civil war. Quote, the guiding idea of the first text, if you wish for the victory of the armed rising, then do revolutionary mass work now, has by no means gone out of fashion. It has been even more precisely stressed in the new edition. Close quote. It forms the transition from agitational propaganda to terrorism. It must begin when their own ranks are strongest and the masses most ripe for action, and on the other hand, when the adversary is weakest and the conditions are most favourable. Disintegration of the adversary, i.e. of the whole of the state organisations and institutions, of the political parties and fighting associations, of the natural executive organs of the people, and of the political opinions, as well as of the character of every fellow citizen, are thus the first step, the negative preparation for the rising. The propagation of Marxism, of the world revolution, and of the future ideal, and the organisation of the recruited and trained masses is the second step, the positive preparation for the armed rising. Quote, it is hardly necessary to emphasise that the agitation and propaganda at such moments is no agitational propaganda work as such, but that it must be adapted to the interests of the armed struggle, with the object of attracting as large masses as possible to active participation in the physical struggle, and of causing confusion, vacillation and disintegration in the opponent's camp. Close quote. All means are justified that lead to the desired end. Everything is permitted that does no damage to the party. Cheating and theft, lying and force, agitation and incitement, espionage and treason, cowardly attacks and murder are just as practicable means as, on the other hand, music halls and tea parties, children's clubs and demonstrations, red sport, and the study of the works of Marx and Engels. One must be ready to make any sacrifice and even, if necessary, to adopt all possible tricks, dodges and illegal methods for concealing the truth. This, says Lenin, must be done when it appears suitable. The objective remains immovable, namely the dictatorship of the proletariat, that is to say, of the Executive Committee of the Communist Internationale.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
The history of the communist revolutionary movement in Germany falls clearly into three parts: 1918 to 1923, 1924 to 1929, and 1930 to 1933. The first period begins with the founding of the Spartacus League, at first as a group within the German Independent Social Democratic Party, to which the date 14/12/1918 can be assigned, the day of the publication of the proclamation and programme of the Spartacus League by Rosa Luxemburg in the Rote Fahne of that time, In that proclamation, the decisive part played by the armed rising is described in unambiguous terms. Quote, "The struggle for socialism is the greatest civil war in the history of the world, and the proletarian revolution must prepare the necessary arms for this civil war, learn to use them to fight and to gain the victory." Close quote. Hardly a month elapsed before the Spartacus League raised the banner of an armed rising in Berlin. The street fighting in January in Berlin was extremely sanguinary and could only be suppressed after days of heavy fighting by military units and artillery. At the same time, a Soviet Republic was proclaimed in Bremen, while street fighting occurred in Hamburg and Wilhelmshaven. In February 1919, Soviet republics were proclaimed in Brunswick and Baden and had to be suppressed with great sacrifice of human life. The general strike and the armed rising in Berlin at the beginning of March 1919 and the armed revolt at the same time in the Ruhr district are still generally remembered. An outstanding position in the continuous series of risings and fighting is occupied by the communist revolution in Munich, where from the 7th of April to the 2nd of May 1919, a Soviet Republic was set up under the leadership of the sailor Rudolf Egelhofer and the Jewish Soviet commissars Levin, Levien and Axelrod. There was a general strike from the 14th to the 22nd of April. Under the leadership of the communists, a Red Army was created and confiscation, expropriations and a telephone censorship carried out. On the 1st of May began the march on Red Munich. The street fighting lasted until the 8th of May and even artillery had to be employed in order to overcome the resistance of the communists. The number of casualties amounted to 927 dead and numberless wounded. On the last day of the Soviet rule, 9 Munich citizens and a woman were shot by the communists as hostages in the courtyard of the Munich Luitpold Gymnasium. The commander-in-chief of the Red Army, Egelhofer, lost his life in the fighting. The spiritual father of the Munich uprising, Eugene Levin, was arrested and shot on the 6th of June 1919 after a full trial. The attempts of the Spartacus League, who organised revolutionary risings, were continued in Leipzig and Hamburg. A year later, in March 1920, there was an attempted rising in the Ruhr district, when a regular Red Army was also formed. In the following month of the same year, occurred the outrages committed by the notorious terrorist Max Holtz in the Vogtland. Numerous house burnings, murders and acts of violence were committed by Max Holtz's bands of terrorists, and the rising could only be quelled after lengthy fighting in which troops were employed. Later, there were again serious communist disturbances in central Germany, Hamburg and the Ruhr district. In the meantime, the economic and financial position of the Weimar Republic became worse, owing to the unexampled inefficiency of its leaders until the inflation of the currency resulted in catastrophe in the autumn of 1923. The wave of communist disturbances and attempted risings increased again on the same scale. In Saxony and Thuringia, the German Communist Party took part in the local governments of the states. At the end of October 1923, an armed rising was attempted in Hamburg, which at first led to the seizure of numerous police posts by the terrorist groups of the Communist Party, and once again was only quelled after lengthy fighting. The Hamburg Rising deserves special attention because it was authoritative in later years for the theory of the armed rising, for the strategy and tactics of street fighting and the organising principles of the German Communist Party. The best-known communist terrorists and leaders of the Civil War, Heinz Neumann, alias Neuberg, Hans Kippenberger, alias Alfred Langer, and Burmeister, alias Walter Zeutschet, derived their experience and teachings from the Hamburg Rising. At the beginning of 1933, these teachings were to be put into practice and the mistakes formerly committed avoided. A certain Clement of tragic comedy is not lacking when one learns from Zeutschel's expert description how it then happened that the armed rising only broke out in Hamburg without being followed by others elsewhere. Quote, when it became known that the Social Democratic Party did not wish to play the game of the Communist Party headquarters, Teddy Thalmann, in a fit of passion, ordered the couriers to start with the order for a rising. Immediately after the conference of the factory councils, the Communist Party headquarters held a meeting to discuss further steps. In their hearts, they were all glad that the Social Democrats had declined. Then suddenly, Teddy announced that he had dispatched the couriers, and the news worked like a bomb. They all leapt from their seats and gazed at each other in blank amazement. Brandler was the first to recover his composure. He at once sent some of his men, who were to stop the couriers. None of them had started, except the man for Hamburg and the man for Mecklenburg. Their train must have started just at the moment when the messengers dashed off. But only the Hamburg man had started. The Mecklenburg man had drunk a cup of coffee in the waiting room while waiting to start, and had just come out onto the platform when the Hamburg train, with which he ought to have travelled, stormed out of the station. The messenger sent after him met him just as he was starting disconcertedly at the tail lights of the train, and asked him breathlessly where the Hamburg man was. "There he goes," he replied. It is worth noting that the agitation for an uprising in Hamburg in 1923 was conducted under the same slogan of anti-fascism as in 1932 and 1933. Russian Jews were again the leading persons concerned in the preparation of the rising. On this occasion, they were Sobelson, alias Karl Radek, and Otto Markart, members of the Soviet commercial mission in Hamburg. The rising was preceded by numerous strikes and excesses. The reason given for the armed rising was also stated to be 10 years ago the bogey of the counter-revolution which might overrun the Republic. A secret head committee for running the rising was appointed, to which the well-known communist Hugo Urbans belonged. The order to strike the first blow was communicated to the terrorist groups who had been alarmed in the night from the 22nd to 23rd of October. The surprise attacks on the outer posts of the Hamburg police occurred about 5 a.m, and these posts were mostly surprised and occupied, the weapons and ammunition falling into the hands of the attackers. A single instance will give an idea of what occurred. Quote, in order to carry out the orders given by the heads of the Communist Party for the starting of the fighting, members of the party in the Prussian communes of Stellingen and Lockstedt had hurried, by order given during the night, on the early morning of the 23rd of October, to the points of assembly indicated to them. The Lockstedt communists, who had assembled near the local school, moved, after waiting for an order brought to them by a cyclist, to the water tower in Stellingen, where they joined the communists assembled there, in order to march in small parties to Einschüttel. When they had assembled again there, the attack began on police post number 42, which lies close to the frontier between Prussia and Hamburg. In doing this, they acted with brutality. The two station police officers, Helmbun and Rogenbach, who belonged to the station and were on patrol, were attacked when the communists reached the corner of the Ulsterstrasse and Mettfesselstrasse. Three men attacked each of them Obviously, according to a prearranged plan, the police officers were seized on the right and the left, while a third man attacked them from the front. Helemba was thrown to the ground and received 3 knife wounds on the head, the chest, and the upper arm. His sword belt, with his bayonet and pistol, were torn off, and one of his assailants shot him in the chest with his own revolver. Helemba could return to duty after 3 months' hospital treatment, but the wounds received by Rogensburg were so severe that he has become a permanent invalid and will probably never leave the hospital alive. The officials in the police posts were completely surprised, so that the ringleaders were able to seize the police post without difficulty. It has been proved that the ringleaders learned at latest at the point of assembly at the Stellingen Water Tower that it was a question of an attack on police post number 42 at Elmsbüttel, and thus of action against the authority of the state. Close quote. It's from a police report. The severest fighting occurred subsequently to this in the Hamburg suburb of Barmbek, which was completely in the hands of the insurgents, who had erected barricades there. A short extract from the police report must also suffice in this case. Quote, "In order to break down this organized and very strong resistance in Barmbek, uniform leadership with powerful forces was necessary. About 10 a.m., Police Major Hartenstein was put in command of the insurgent district of Barmbek. He had at his disposal the detachments already there, and further the 7th section next for duty, the 1st Free Harbour Police Post, 50 men of the permanent section, and 3 armoured cars, which were later supplemented by the 2 armoured cars from Elmsbüttel after they could be spared there. The organised employment of the forces at the disposal of Police Major Hartenstein was considerably hampered and partly rendered impossible by the fact that these forces were already fired upon and involved in fighting on their way to the point of assembly. They were ordered to police post number 46. The insurgents put up powerful resistance from roofs, attic windows, recesses in the walls of the houses, cellar windows, and from the street barricades. During the whole of the 23rd of October 1923, it was not possible to quell the rising in Barmbek. The resistance was too strong for it to be possible to carry out operations or move the forces in the streets by daylight without considerable losses. It was only when darkness fell that it was possible to surround the centre of communist resistance with strong points of support, in order to force a way from these points into the communist nest on the 24th of October and smoke them out. Close quote. The rising cost, the assailants, the lives of at least 40 men, while the number of wounded is estimated at 150. The losses of the police in recapturing police post 42 alone were 3 dead and 12 wounded, while in recapturing Barmbek North and Barmbek South, 5 police officers were killed and 13 wounded. Once again, in April 1925, the attention of Germany was directed to the criminal plans for violent action on the part of the communists, in connection with the trial of the Soviet, Russian and German Czechists and terrorists in the Supreme Court in Leipzig. Furthermore, the Communist Party had adopted a new line of strategy, which they retained until 1929. The idea and purpose of their work consisted in the conquest of the majority of the working class, as the programme of the Communist Internationale expresses it. They had realised that the healthy forces of the nation were too strong for it to be possible to seize the power by a coup de main, in spite of the inefficiency of the government. What then followed was an almost boundless system of agitation, propaganda, individual action and organisations, which left no single class of the German people untouched, which poured the Bolshevist poison into every vein of the body corporate of the nation, and had everywhere a disintegrating effect in order to put the feverish organism in the condition of an immediately impending revolutionary situation. the procedure, the tactics, and the methods of this persistent and well-aimed Bolshevik work of disintegration and propaganda among the workpeople, the unemployed, the peasantry, the women, the young, and the children have been described in detail elsewhere. Alongside a social Bolshevism, with its incitement to class hatred and civil war, a quite special task was assigned during this period to cultural Bolshevism, which was to disintegrate the moral power of resistance of the nation in books, pamphlets, periodicals, films, theatres and meetings, break up the social community and undermine and destroy the German character. The kernel of cultural Bolshevism was formed by the recklessly hateful and low godless movement, while the propaganda in favour of free love, moral decay and moral perversity was able in the cleverest way to harness the sexual impulse for the political aims of the Communist International. It is, of course, obvious that political Bolshevism was, at the same time, not neglected, but pumped every day into the nation, in an edition running to millions of copies. Pacifism, treason, espionage, theft and crime were also, at this period, the usual weapons of the so-called ideological offensive.